Have you seen those videos of Asian carp jumping out of the water and banging into boaters? They're almost comical until you realize the threat that this invasive species poses to other fish and the Great Lakes ecosystem. Then they're more frightening than they're funny. We'll talk about the efforts to prevent the spread of the Asian carp after a water sample from the Bay of Green Bay near Sturgeon Bay recently tested positive for Asian carp DNA. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, November 11th, Veterans Day 2013. We'll have a program on veterans benefits and tributes today during our state capitol report after 7:30 this morning. But in this hour, we will welcome your questions and your concerns about the Asian carp. And the call from all 16 U.S. senators from Great Lakes states that want fast action to stop the invasive fish from swimming up the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal into the Great Lakes. What will that take? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Phil Moy. He is the Assistant Director of Research and Outreach with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. He spent 11 years as the program's Fisheries and Invasive Species Specialist. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So, first off, what are Asian carp?
Well, Asian carp, I guess it's actually several fish, and you might call it Asian carp.
Okay.
It's a suite of big head carp, silver carp, black carp, and grass carp that are all imported to the U.S. from China for use in aquaculture for various reasons. They have particular feeding habits that are desirable for use in aquaculture and for vegetation control. The grass carp eats vegetation like it's called macro vegetation, like weeds. And the black carp consumes a snail that harbors a parasite that's harmful to catfish. And the other two, the big head carp and silver carp, which are the ones we're hearing about more often now, consume plankton. The big head carp eats the larger animal plankton, and silver carp feeds on the plant plankton. They do that by pumping water in and straining it over their gills, and that strains out the plankton. They swallow that.
Well, what's wrong with them eating plankton?
Well, the plankton forms the basis of the food chain or the food web, and that's basically provides food for everything else that's out in the water column. So this tiny plankton that they're eating or the animal plankton forms the food for other small organisms, which forms the food for forage fish, which, of course, is the food for sport fish, and commercial fish, which is what we go after.
Mm.
So it's kind of pulling the rug out from under the food web. It's a very, very similar to what we've seen with the effect of quagga mussels in the Great Lakes.
What kind of mussels?
Quagga mussels. They're related to zebra mussels.
Yes, I heard of the zebra mussel. Okay, so this, they were imported for aquaculture, and what, they got out?
Well, it's kind of a combination of getting out and being intentionally stocked. They were intentionally stocked or released. You know, they were done with the aquaculture operations, and not just commercial operations, but with state or federal commercial or aquaculture operations as well. And the fish were released into the wild, or they were held in sewage treatment lagoons, and the lagoons may have flooded during the high water years, and they got out. So we can, about all we can do in terms of, you know, if you want to point fingers and lay blame, about all you can say is it came from down south. You can't say, oh, it was this commercial fish farmer and an irresponsible practice that caused these fish to get loose. There was a federal hand in it, there was municipal hands in it, as well as private hands.
Well, let's turn from pointing the finger there to talk about this Asian carp DNA that was found in a water sample from Sturgeon Bay recently. How big a deal is this?
Well, of course, it raises concerns. but we do need to kind of keep this in perspective. So there is one positive sample out of many, many samples taken. When they retested it, it did not come up positive again. So it's enough to say, well, gee, you know, we need to look some more. We need to take additional water samples, or, you know, I know that the DNR is not quite ready to send out an armada of boats and additional sampling gear to try and find, you know, is there actually a fish out there? We've kind of gone through that exercise down on Lake Calumet in the Chicago area, where repeatedly they've come up with positive eDNA samples down there. They send out a huge amount of manpower out under the lake and enormous nets covering almost the entire lake area, and then they come up with no fish. So there's something going on with the test that we're maybe not quite on top of. It could be that it's a false positive. I mean, we're talking about testing for molecules here. Mm-hmm. So something could come up that gives a false positive reading, or I know the federal government, the Corps of Engineers and Fish and Wildlife Service have identified other ways that the DNA might spread through animals or birds flying or bird feces that have consumed the Asian carp and then migrate long distances. Or it could even come off of, in other circumstances, maybe even if the vests, the life vests that the people are wearing were used to net fish, they were worn when they were netting fish farther downstream, and then they have that little bits of slime on their life vests or on the nets, on the boats, even that could cause a positive result in some of these water samples. That's how sensitive it is. So I doubt that this cross contamination was a factor for the Notre Dame testing, because they would not have been involved in netting of the fish. But just as an example, they are trying to isolate molecules in the water.
Yeah, so why are we looking for DNA instead of the fish themselves?
Well, it's sort of the flip side of the test. The test is very, very sensitive, and you can go out and take a water sample in an area where the fish was present. It doesn't even have to be present right then. It might have been there a few hours before, or if it's still water, maybe even a few days before, or, you know, if there's a lot of them there, take a water sample rather than laying out a net and trying to find that one fish or 10 fish or 5 fish. You can take a water sample now, go back to your lab, run it, and say, yep, that organism is out there. So it's a particularly effective tool to identify whether or not there's a species, a target species, present in a body of water.
Mm-hmm. But as you say, that we still need to know more. It could be a false positive test. It could be that a bird dropped some droppings into the water. It is not. You're not panicking over this.
Not over this. No. If they had taken their samples and they'd come back and 50% of them was positive, yeah, I'd be a little bit more concerned about that. But this is one sample out of many. And as I mentioned, the retest of it didn't come back positive. So we'd say, this is interesting. This is enough to cause us to go back, to take more water samples. But we're not going to poison out the bay right now.
Yeah. Well, we will talk about more about the Asian carp and the efforts to prevent the Asian carp from spreading into the Great Lakes. We'll ask our guest about the 16 senators from the states bordering the Great Lakes sending a letter to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers upon the announcement of this DNA test result, urging fast action to stop the fish from entering Lake Michigan. And we'll talk about what that might mean, and we'll welcome your questions about the Asian carp. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, November 11th. We are talking with a guest from the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program about the Asian carp. Senators from Great Lakes states are urging fast action on preventing the spread of Asian carp after DNA was found in Sturgeon Bay last month. We will welcome your questions for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Phil Moy. He is the Assistant Director of Research and Outreach with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. He spent 11 years as the program's Fisheries and Invasive Species Specialist. We have Chris on Facebook who posts, "They were never going to stop them. It was just a matter of time." Same with the garlic mustard, the zebra mussels, the ash borer, talking about a number of other invasive species there. So, Phil Moy, let me just ask you, can we stop the Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes?
Sure we can. If we did not have any electric barrier in the sanitary canal at Chicago, you'd have an open conduit running right into the Great Lakes. Certainly, this is slowing them down. We need to remember back in September 2009, the barrier was shut off for a little while. And shortly after that, the following spring, DNA was also found in Calumet Harbor. That's essentially in Lake Michigan. So, yeah, maybe a few fish got through then, but since that time, we haven't found any other fish upstream.
Yeah, so what do these...
The other side of that is that up in Lake Erie, a few big head carp have been captured, probably as a consequence of prayer release. It's a religious practice. So, yeah, a few sporadic individuals probably are present in the lake, but this... large onslaught has thus far been prevented.
So what is needed? What fast action can we take that these 16 U.S. senators want?
Well, if it's anything akin to what was asked for a few years ago, they want to close the locks at Chicago. And while that could, it would stop fish from moving through there, but it also puts an immediate stop to a lot of commerce and ties Chicago's hands in terms of handling stormwater discharge. So it's a rather impractical solution that was also tossed out by the federal court system. And, while this finding of DNA in a water sample in Sturgeon Bay, again, raises our concerns and perhaps reminds us to be vigilant, the Corps of Engineers is actually working very quickly, as quickly as they can, on coming up with what's going to be the next best step beyond just the electric barriers to preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species through the sanitary and ship canal. They're doing a report right now, and the results of that report are due out next month.
Okay. Let me take a caller. Daniel in Rice Lake is with us. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. These invasive carp species are following the Mississippi watershed north. Can we expect an infestation into the Wisconsin rivers and lakes that drain into the Mississippi?
They are moving up the Mississippi. Yep, they're up as far as Lot 1 on the Mississippi River in Minnesota. So, yes, we can expect these fish to start to move up into the Mississippi, the tributaries of the Mississippi, up at least to the first major obstacle, whether that's a lock or more likely some kind of a dam And so conceivably, particularly if they're moved by, if they begin to reproduce and the small ones are inadvertently picked up as bait, they look a lot like shad, they could potentially be spread around.
So what would that do to, I mean, what would that do, what would that mean if, for example, it is the Mississippi and its tributaries? Does that destroy all the fish that need that plankton that they eat?
Well, rivers are clearly a different situation than the Great Lakes. It's a flowing system, tends to have more nutrients in it, but it doesn't mean that the fish are not having an impact on the plankton. They're changing, even on the Illinois River, which is a very, very, well, we would call it eutrophic. It's a nutrient-rich river. We're starting to see some changes in the size of plankton and the species of plankton that are out there. We feel that that's a consequence of the presence of the silver carp and big head carp. They're also competing with other species that forage on plankton as well. We're seeing a decrease in the size and the condition of those fish. So, yeah, they can have an impact out there.
Yeah, and as for the Great Lakes and the impact on Lake Michigan, this could, if the Asian carp does infest or spread to Lake Michigan in any numbers, this would, you hinted at, really impact the commercial fishing industry?
Well, that's kind of making a big leap. I mean, we'd have to have, you know, there are males and females. They require rivers, tributaries to spawn in, so they would have to get together in enough numbers, and while they do spawn, they kind of have an orgy-like spawning. They get together in big bunches and roll around and have a big, big time. So they swim up tributaries, and while conceivably you could just have two fish and they might pull off a good hatch, more likely you're going to need 5 or 10 or, you know, some multiple number of fish to find the same tributary, swim up at the same time, have a good year, that is, like, good flow and all the right environmental conditions to have the eggs hatch. And the fry have to come out into the, whether it's the Great Lakes or quiet places in the river, and find enough for them to eat. So it's not add carp to water and have disaster. You have to have a number of right conditions for them to be able to pull off a strong year class, and then that year class has to grow up, and we, you know, might eventually get an established population. Then, do all those fish find enough to eat out there? They are now, would be competing with the zebra mussel relatives, the quagga mussel that has spread throughout the lake, so we already have a depleted or depressed forage base. So it's not going to be instantaneous, even if it does happen. So it's going to take a while, and there's several steps involved in order for them to get established, and then are they really going to become super abundant to have this adverse effect?
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary on Facebook writes, the pristine, balanced ecosystem is a myth. It never existed and never will. Nature has no preferences and will simply adjust as it always has. The Great Lakes will survive this new species as it has survived other new species in the past. The sooner the carp get in the lake, the sooner this adjustment will take place. What do you make of that, Phil?
Well, I guess the flip side of that is what new paradigm might exist after the presence or establishment of the carp, and are we going to like that? I guess we think about things as being in a homeostasis or this equilibrium of ecology, and we like that because we perceive that as being stable. We can go out and we can harvest fish, and we harvest the fish that we like, and we tend to harvest the numbers that we like. Yeah, they fluctuate from year to year, but we know it's a dependable resource. That dependable resource has changed in the Great Lakes in terms of where the protein is being established and residing. A lot of our forage fish protein is now instead taking the form of quagga mussel bodies down on the bottom of the lake. So, sure, I mean, the lake isn't going to go away, even if Asian carp get established. But are we going to like what it becomes? Are we going to now have to shift our fish harvest to Asian carps? And do people like to eat Asian carps? You know, yeah, right now there's a limited market in the U.S. for those. But they're big minnows. They're really bony. And even though they're good for you, they're healthy, and the fish is light-flavored, is it really the traditional whitefish and border chubs and yellow perch and, in terms of sport fish, salmon and rainbow trout and brown trout?
Well, let me jump in because I need to jump in because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up, and then we will continue after the news talking more about Asian carps. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. What questions do you have about Asian carp? What do you think should be done to slow their spread into the Great Lakes? Or do you think they're not that big of a problem? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, November 11th. A water sample from Lake Michigan's Sturgeon Bay has tested positive for Asian carp DNA. We are talking about what this means and what efforts are needed to keep the invasive species from harming the Great Lakes ecosystem. Talking about the senators from Great Lakes states that are urging fast action to prevent the spread of the Asian carp. And welcoming your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Phil Moy. He is the Assistant Director of Research and Outreach with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. He spent 11 years as the program's Fisheries and Invasive Species Specialist. And for those listeners just joining us, Phil Moy, let's kind of recap a little bit. This DNA sample was found in Sturgeon Bay, but you say subsequent testing did not repeat that positive test. I'm reading that the Wisconsin DNR will continue to conduct follow-up testing, so they're just looking to see if they can repeat this positive test?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they went out and collected many, many water samples, and only one sample out of all of those came back positive. So, it's, you know, if half of them had come back positive, wow, this would really raise a lot of flags, and we'd be probably seeing some action in terms of sampling. But this is one. And when they did a more sensitive test on that same water sample, they didn't come up with another positive. So, yeah, it's a concern, sure. We want to follow up on that, but it's not enough for hysteria.
Okay. And how would Asian carp get into Lake Michigan? It would be from this Chicago Sanitary Canal?
Well, right. There's a couple ways they might get in. They have been probably inadvertently stocked in some ponds. Either they came in with catfish that were stocked there for fishing, or maybe they were intentionally stocked to help control algae or something. And maybe someone released them, or they could have been some sort of a religious release. Or, as we mentioned earlier, back in September of 2009, when the barrier was shut down for a while for maintenance, it's possible that a few of them could have been there sort of waiting at the door and swam through at that time. As we know, that after that, though, there had been some positive eDNA samples in the Chicago area in Lake Michigan. So, well, that's now, what, 4 years ago? And it's not inconceivable for these, you know, these are big, powerful fish to have made their way up the shoreline and actually have been swimming around Sturgeon Bay. So it's possible. Seems unlikely, but it's possible.
And this electric barrier that is on the Chicago Sanitary Canal or around it, that is, we believe, doing a good job in stopping the fish?
Yes. Yeah, it's been on since then. The Corps of Engineers have constructed two other larger, more powerful electric arrays, and they're in the process of constructing what would essentially be a fourth, even bigger electric array, or just sort of a more, they're calling it a more permanent barrier one to replace the old demonstration barrier that was constructed in 2002. So there's going to be a whole lot of electricity, a whole lot of redundancy and power and ability for manipulation of the electric field in that little quarter mile stretch of the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal. Now that's a good start. That's not an end all. This is kind of a bridge that it buys us a little time to get down to what might be a more permanent solution. That would be something that's more effectively closes that watery door. And that's what's going to take a while. That's what this Corps of Engineers report that's due out next month is going to start to talk about. What are some options? What are more viable options? What are all the options that might be considered to close that water door at Chicago?
Well, we have a caller. Steve in Sturgeon Bay is with us. Hello, Steve.
Hi. I didn't want to be redundant, but I know people have been asking to shut that lock for more than a year now. And it seems like with the entire Great Lakes at risk, that should have been the first thing that was done. And I often wonder if Chicago politics and our president measure up in some matter as responsible for the fact that it hasn't been closed. It seems like a quick solution. And then after, it seems like the obvious first action would be to shut the lock. Long term, the river should be put back the way it used to be and reverse the direction. But that's a huge step. What do you think of that?
Well, that's what this report is working towards, is what we might call re-reversing the river, because as you obviously know, back in the 1910s, essentially, on a more permanent basis, the river was reversed so it didn't flow into Lake Michigan. Now it flows out of Lake Michigan. But, you know, in the last 100 and some years, there's been a lot of infrastructure developed around Chicago, and a lot of people down there would kind of resent having their basements flooded with poop. So that is the stormwater discharge, the wastewater discharge, the drinking water concerns for Chicago is a pretty big factor in saying we're just going to close those locks. Yes, navigation is a concern too. There is a fair amount of commerce that takes place between the lake and the river and the navigation. But another really big factor is how you handle that stormwater discharge, just like Milwaukee has a discharge of combined sewer and stormwater when they have a big storm system come through. Chicago still has that, even though they have the deep tunnel system and this major Chicago River and the Calumet River discharging now downstream. If they get a big storm, they got to let that water out or they start flooding downtown. There are, for the long term, there's some pretty significant hurdles to get over. And if you just say, we're going to close that lock and we're going to keep it closed, you're destining a lot of Chicago to flooding in the event of a major storm.
Interesting.
The other side is, the electric barrier is now on, and it is stopping the fish. The fish are not getting through. It would literally be like closing the barn door after the horse is out at this point.
And you mentioned that, and I'm not familiar with this, but there was a federal court decision that said, no, we're not going to close the locks.
Right. That was the outcome of the last lawsuit where all the Great Lakes lined up and said, the Great Lakes states, and said, we want you to close these locks right away, just like we're asking for now, rapid action. And the Supreme Court said, no, no, Chicago doesn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And when our, Stephen, I'm glad you brought this up again because we didn't pursue it at a great length. But Stephen said, with the entire Great Lakes ecosystem at risk, you know, and went on. But give us an idea of the scope. It doesn't sound to me like you're trying not to panic us, but if the Asian carps took hold, this does, what does it mean for the Great Lakes?
Well, if we go out to, let's see, you know, people want to think about the worst case scenario. Okay. Think about the worst case scenario. Let's say thousands of these fish actually get in and they're now able to spread throughout the Great Lakes. They do fine living along the margins of the lakes. They find good food and good habitat. They start to congregate in rivers that are suitable for their spawning. They get together. They pull off some good year classes 3 or 4 years in a row and really get established. Yeah, now we might start to see some changes, additional changes in the food web, further depression of the existing desirable fish population. So we would see perhaps either a less robust fish population or less abundance, or the fish themselves might be skinnier, you know, less able to maintain their own species in the lake. You know, you could conceivably think of the silver carp leaping into the air, being stirred up by boaters or jet skis near shore, and you know, seeing some of the same effects that we're seeing on the rivers in terms of boat damage and boater injuries.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? They actually do just decide that they want to take a little flight out of the water?
You know, this is something that has puzzled the Asian carp researchers for a while. You know, why? The fish don't do this in China and in their natural habitat, but somehow we got a particularly jumpy strain of silver carp, and they respond, you know, they get scared by the noise of the motor or the bow pressure wave, and I think particularly when they're in large groups, they tend to bump into one another, or one jumps, and then the next jumps, and the next jumps, kind of like dominoes going down, and so they leap up out of the water. Now, maybe if they were in a deep water environment, they may tend to go down as much as they might tend to come up. But if they're in a shallow water environment, say, you know, 6-5 feet deep, like a shallow margin of a river, they tend to mostly go up. Even if they bump into the bottom, they'll come back up out of the water. So it's hard to say, yeah, this would for sure happen on the Great Lakes. But that seems to be that they're just nervous fish, and they pop up out of the water when they get scared.
We are talking about the threat of Asian carps should they get into Lake Michigan or the Great Lakes. And we are welcoming your questions about what we should do to stop the fish from entering the Great Lakes. There was a positive Asian carp DNA sample that came from Lake Michigan's Sturgeon Bay last month. And we are talking about Asian carps with Phil Moy. He is the Assistant Director of Research and Outreach with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 9 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Monday, November 11th. We are talking about Asian carp and the discovery of Asian carp DNA from Lake Michigan's Sturgeon Bay, one water sample talking about what this means and what efforts are underway to keep the invasive species from getting into the Great Lakes. And we're welcoming your questions about Asian carp. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Carl in La Crosse. Hi, Carl.
Good morning.
Morning.
I know that Asian carp are all the way up the Illinois River, and I've heard that the electronic barrier has had limited success, and governments are from Midwest states and Canada are pushing for the complete physical closure of the lock system between the Great Lakes and the Illinois River, which you would think would be the final physical barrier that you would have to close. But if we go to those lengths and close the locks between those two water systems and we get that all accomplished, what's to stop somebody with ill intent, a vandal, or somebody with a wheelbarrow full of Asian carp to just dump them in the Great Lakes anyway? Once we've completely closed off that barrier, are we going to be able to completely keep those fish out of the Great Lakes if somebody wants to do that?
Well, no, probably not. You know, if someone really, really wants to do something, obviously it's very difficult to stop them from doing that without, you know, essentially having guards at every single access point or along the entire border of the Great Lakes. No, you're not going to stop someone from doing that. But I wanted to, that's a good point, because it kind of circles back to what we were talking about just before the break, and that is this worst-case scenario. And that is, even if that happens, it would take a long time to get there. It took these fish over two decades to become established in the Mississippi River, a much more suitable habitat than the Great Lakes are. So, you know, a wheelbarrow full of fish, what is that, 5-10 fish maybe? Or, you know, maybe we're talking about buckets and buckets of little fish that are nice little silvery-looking things that are really yummy for salmon. So it would take probably a lot of fish in order to, in just the right environment, to really get established out there. And even if we do pull off a good year class, there's still a ways to say now these are going to become established. We're going to see year class after year class of young fish going out there. The adults are getting together every year. Yep, they're definitely established. They're starting to spread. They're starting to have these multiple effects. If it happens, it's going to take a while. So it's, while all of this raises concerns, we need to go at it methodically and take a reasonable approach into how we're going to handle this.
Yeah. Now, Carl said that the electronic barrier has had limited success. You say that besides them shutting it down for that one period, it has had good success.
Yeah, I think it's been mischaracterized in the press and some stories that it's not working very well. It does work very well. It has some, it's perhaps more effective on big fish than on little fish. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen any small Asian carp getting through. We haven't found any small Asian carp even in the river below the electric barrier where they would be challenging it. So the electric barrier has been effective, yes.
Let's go to Clayton now in Madison. Hi, Clayton.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Is there any biological solution to the Asian carp? That is, do we have a predator, or is there a predator in China that we might even consider importing to go after the silver carp and the big head carp?
Yeah, that's always a favorite approach, although Australia might argue against that for several reasons. What we're looking at right now in terms of the most biological sort of approach is using the Asian carp's feeding methodology, that filter feeding methodology, as a way to get them to ingest a toxin. So we would be using the same sorts of common fish toxins that are commonly applied on a broad scale, and it affects almost all species of fish. By putting it into a microencapsulated particle and having that little particle be sensitive to the pH and the enzymes in the Asian carp's digestive systems, we can spread that into the water column and have the fish filter that out. So they're just treating the big head carp or the silver carp. They filter out those particles, and this toxin or fish poison affects those two species, not all the species sitting in the water. So that's, in terms of, I know that that's not the biocontrol that you're talking about, but at least it's using the biology of the fish against them.
Briefly, because we're almost out of time, you said that Australia would not advocate for this. Why?
Because they had a long history of bringing in a pest, and then they brought in something else to control the pest, and something else, you know, it's like the little old lady who swallowed a fly. I mean, it's...
Right, right. And I mean, we brought...
An ongoing theory, a bad idea.
Yeah, another invasive species, perhaps.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful in terms of bringing in a new species to control an invasive. In terms of purple loosestrife, we found that the beetle that eats just purple loosestrife instead of other things. So you just got to be very, very careful in terms of doing that.
Phil, we just have less than a minute. What's the outlook for the health of the Great Lakes?
Well, the Great Lakes are cleaner. They are less polluted right now than they have been in the past. But right now, also, we're looking at how do we handle this change in the food web and continue to maintain healthy fisheries to support commercial fisheries and sport fisheries into the future. And that's that nutrient dynamic change is really the challenge that we're looking at now. We have good scientists looking at this, and hopefully they'll come up with some answers for us.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Phil Moy is the Assistant Director of Research and Outreach with the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. He spent 11 years as the program's Fisheries and Invasive Species Specialist, talking with us about ways to prevent the Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes. Senators from Great Lakes states are urging fast action on preventing the spread of the Asian carp after DNA was recently found in a water sample from Sturgeon Bay. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.